is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. And we're very privileged to be joined by our colleague from many years, Jonathan Speier of the Jerusalem Center. We're keen because what we're looking at now is a changing map in the Middle East and throughout Eurasia. The map is changing because of decisions made by NATO, by the United States, and by Beijing. I note that what we have here is a story that is unending. We have no easy version of this, but Jonathan joins us as a Middle Eastern analyst, immediately taking us to Iran and China. This is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. But, Jonathan, a very good day to you. Thank you for this. Iran and China, that's not an obvious match. However, there have been reports for some time of China buying oil from Iran, though it is sanctioned. Is the contemplation for more than just customer and client?
I think it's a lot more than that, John. First of all, with regard to the purchases of oil, at least in my analysis, that has already played a very serious strategic role for Iran, because that purchase of oil is a large part of the reason why Iran was able to successfully resist the period of maximum pressure on it during the incumbency of the Trump administration. So Chinese economic relations with Iran have already played a beneficial strategic role for the Iranians. And as we know now, there was in March declared agreement for a 25-year cooperation between Iran and China, which is supposed to involve the investment of $400 billion by the Chinese in the Iranian economy. Now, many people at that time said that's just a declaration. Okay, the invitation to Iran to join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the first tangible strategic fruit, I would say, of that agreement. And with all caveats, and there are caveats because the Shanghai Cooperation Organization also includes countries that are not anti-US and are not anti-Western, such as the Republic of India. And China has also invited Saudi Arabia and Egypt, both US allies, to become observers. But with all those relevant caveats, which we should bear in mind, nevertheless, this does seem to me to be the first move in a dance, if I can put it that way. And that dance is the fact that there is an emergent global Cold War system coming between the United States of America and the People's Republic of China. And like previous Cold War systems, this one is not going to leave any region untouched. And the Middle East is not going to remain non-aligned in that Cold War. And that means we're seeing the beginnings of the process in which countries are aligning alongside this or that global power. And in this respect, what we're seeing is an attempt by China to woo Islamic Republic of Iran to its side.
Malcolm?
Is this the underpinnings of a Cold War then in the making? And if so, what are the implications of Iran's inclusion for NATO, with Russia and China spearheading the organization, and the joint military simulations and exercises that we have seen?
Well, I think that this is the beginning of a Cold War. And I would say, what are the implications? Well, as we know, the main Chinese global strategy is the BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative. And what the inclusion of Iran in the SCO will do is it will enable a number of countries already belonging to SCO, landlocked Central Asian countries, to now have a passage out towards the Arabian Sea and towards global maritime routes. So it's a very significant kind of geostrategic step. With regard to military and military cooperation, I would say it's too early to say at this stage. The Chinese are wary, of course. They are wary about going too far down the road towards confrontation in this regard. But I would say we're seeing the first bricks being laid, so to speak, in a building, which will eventually have also those strategic implications. Let me add that Iran has an advantage for China in the following way, because Iran is one of those countries that ain't going to try and hedge its bets. There's no way that the Iranians are going to become part of a US-led alliance. So even though there's no ideological commonality between the Islamists in Tehran and the notional communists in Beijing, Iran has that advantage with regard to the Chinese point of view.
Jonathan, first world, second world, third world, we're back to the Cold War thinking, and Iran seems to embrace this with remarks that you quote from President Raisi. The international balance from now on leans towards multilateralism and the redistribution of powers towards independent countries. That's a quote that could easily have come from 1970, not 2021.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's right. And, you know, as we've seen, the Iranians have already, as we said, have already managed to benefit from the Chinese connection, Chinese purchases of illegal oil transfers enabled Iran to ride through the period of maximum pressure. And so that should be seen as an indication of what's to come. Now, the Iranians have an enormous amount to gain from this. Arguably, it's the Chinese that need to be more careful because Iran is already internationally isolated to a degree and has little to lose. Whereas the Chinese, of course, fascinatingly in this Cold War system, not like the last one, in this one, China and the United States maintain, nevertheless, a very extensive trade relationship, which means that China has to watch out for U.S. sanctions, U.S. objections, too. And that's one of the reasons, in my view, why it's taken so long for Iran to get this invitation. But get it, they now have. And that's a very significant moment, I would say.
Can you switch a little bit to Syria? And we've seen the reports that Russia asked Israel to get the United States to agree to trilateral talks about Syria. What is behind this for Russia at a time when it seems to be on the ascendancy? And how does this impact what Assad has succeeded in integrating into the economies in the neighborhood?
Yeah, right. Good question. Well, I think these things all belong together. Assad is managing to reintegrate himself into the local economy. The latest move in that, of course, is the Jordanian decision to reopen the Jabir al-Nasib border crossing, the main border crossing between Syria and Jordan. So there is a process in which Assad is returned to the Arab fold. Of course, the UAE and also Egypt are very much behind, also in Iraq, also trying to increase relations with him. Russia wants to promote that process. Russia wants to see Assad return to rule over all of Syria. Right now, he, of course, only controls around 60% of it, and he wants to see Assad return to full diplomatic legitimacy. And that, I think, is what Russia is now trying to push forward. From an Israeli point of view, I'm sitting here in Jerusalem, of course, this has a worrying implication, because the fact is that while notionally Assad may be the president of Syria, on the ground, the Iranians and their various proxies do exactly what they want, all the way from the border with Iraq to the border with the Golan Heights in Israel. And there's a worrying possibility in which, as Assad returns to formal legitimacy and acceptability in the world, actually the Iranians are the ones running things on the ground, and then it'll be much more complicated for Israel to carry on doing what it has found necessary to be doing over the last half decade with regard to the ongoing war or campaign between the wars, as we call it here in Israel, the ongoing military campaign to try to prevent the entrenchment and consolidation of the Iranian presence on the ground in Syria.
Jonathan, how integrated is the Axis powers? Can they push a button in Beijing that sends a light on in Moscow, that issues an order to Damascus that provokes Israel in some fashion? Do they talk like that, these three capitals?
I wouldn't say it's anywhere near that level yet. I mean, I think that the Chinese are at a much earlier stage of their process of kind of regional and global assertion. And in fact, the Chinese still kind of want to have decent relations with everyone if they can, because they want to expand their economic influence. It's just that as American pushback comes to their efforts at building hegemony, so countries will be forced to choose as to what side they're on. That's with regard to China. With regard to Moscow and Damascus, however, yes, the answer is that Assad owes his survival to a great extent to Putin's efforts. And as a result, you know, when Putin shouts, Assad has to get up. But we have to remember that this is a three-way alliance inside Syria, not two-way. There's Putin, Assad, and the Iranians. And the Iranians and the Russians have quite different outlooks and agendas. For a long period of time here in Israel, there was a hope that Israel's decent relations with Russia might enable Israel to kind of leverage that towards a Russian objection and active measures to prevent Iranian consolidation. Events of recent weeks, including in Dara in the southwest of Syria, close to the border with Israel and further north, are indicating that's a forlorn hope. That hope is not going to be realized. The Russians are not going to stand against the Iranians. But there isn't a sense, I think, in which there's a fully coordinated alliance going on here. There are the beginnings and some very close links at the top level. And with regard to the clients, such as Assad and so on, then yes, they really do have an integrated relationship with their patrons, in which they better listen pretty carefully when the patron says he's got something he wants them to do.
We just have a few seconds, Jonathan. How far along in the timeline is China? Are they in the early stages of these alliances, or has they been working on this for some time? We just have a few seconds.
Yeah, I think they're in the very early stages. What they want to do is they want to build areas of control, link those up, have contiguous trade routes, and those trade routes and those trade links will eventually turn into strategic alliances. But we're at a very, very early stage of that process, I would say.
Jonathan Speier is the director of the Middle East Center for Reporting and Analysis and a research fellow at the Jerusalem Center for Strategy and Security. Fellow at the Middle East Forum, Malcolm Holmline, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.